I mean, I smoked like a chimney for many years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we used to smoke all the time outside the catacombs during Quite the right. Two Drink Trivia.
Yeah.
Which, that was a blast.
It was,
That indeed. Was how we met.
That was how we know
that
each
is
other.
That is our moment.
I mean, you remain one of the people in Colorado that I probably go back the furthest and still keep in touch with a little bit.
Yeah. No, I totally agree, because, like, that's... God, what? That's got to be at least, like, 12 years?
Yeah, it's got about 12 years. I think it was 2007. Yeah.
Yeah.
2007.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. Because it was you and Michelle and...
Jenny
and...
Bonnie.
That's right, Bonnie. Megan.
Rob.
Who was the short redheaded girl that always smoked with us? I don't know if she was on your team.
Short redheaded girl. I don't recall a short redheaded girl. Maybe. Was she,
She could be a phantom of my imagination.
I'm sure she was real. And also, usually I'd been drinking a lot. So
oh, yeah, yeah.
My because... memory of these times...
Because we didn't realize that we were living in the halcyon times of $1 well drinks. That was.
Oh, my God.
Which I just reminisce on the fact that, like, every trivia night I would have, like, 5 whiskey and sodas and spend $5.
Right.
You know, plus tip, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
You gotta take care of your bartender.
Ample tip, indeed.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I think I've spent the entirety of my life since leaving Boulder, and since particularly Catacombs closed, looking for Catacombs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, like, and I can't find it.
Should we make a documentary called Looking for Catacombs, where we go to bars trying to recapture this notion
this sounds
of our youth?
Like a wonderful way of spending, you know, many afternoons and evenings of trying... Yes, a documentary, like, what a great excuse for just going and drinking cheap-ass beer and well cocktails.
And plus, look, like, documentary filmmaking needs more work by 30-something white guys who were trying to talk
exactly.
about the days when they were younger.
Right?
Right? I mean, there's not enough of that story.
No, never. our voices do not have, you know, really any representation, I think you'll find, in popular media across the board.
It's been greatly diminished.
That's been greatly
there were
diminished.
A bunch of women in this new Avengers movie. That's no spoiler. That's just there were.
Women and people of color.
Yeah.
Even
Thanos is purple.
Yeah, Thanos is purple. Played by a white dude, but purple.
But purple.
Played by, like, do you catch Brolin on, like, on interviews and shit? That dude is weird.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Huh.
He's like, I mean, he goes kind of somewhere in between, I'm being mysterious and I'm hyper-masculine, and also something else is going on back there.
Is he
that
like
I think is more
Joaquin Phoenix rap project weird?
Mm. No, it's a more authentic kind of weird.
Okay, so it's not, but it's not quite Gary Busey weird.
No, I mean, that's a special category.
No, yeah, that's a whole thing. Yeah, yeah what like, I can imagine is it's sort of the, it's like Robert De Niro weird.
Yeah.
Like when you see Robert
exactly.
De Niro being the human being that is Robert De Niro without any sort of memorized script or prompting.
Right. There's very little there.
Yeah.
It's.
Yeah, it's like he's.
Like
he's
he might
really,
be interesting.
He could be Orphan Black.
Yeah.
Like just imprint something on me and I become that thing.
Exactly.
Or the Joss Whedon dollhouse show.
Exactly. Yeah. Clearly the best thing that Whedon has ever done.
Yes, absolutely.
Make sure my phone's not, you know, like, vibrating.
Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a pseudo-game show podcast hosted by me, Nate Regolia. Each week I subject my guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea about them. With me, as always, this week is no one. Shannon Page was called away on a work emergency. John Paros is unavailable, so you are going to bear witness to a unique two-hander episode of this show where there is only one guest, and that is Seth Harris.
Hello.
Seth, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be
Seth,
here.
Seth, you're an actor.
That's correct.
You're a luminary.
Okay.
You're an academic.
I have a degree.
You do. And you have the wits about you to buy quality scotch, so
goddamn right.
So there's that. Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, it's my
really
pleasure.
Great.
Glad you're here.
So what we're going to do this week, because this is such a unique scenario. We've never had an episode where it's just me and one guest.
How many episodes are you at now?
I think this is 29.
29? Yeah. You had a good run of actually, you know, like, having guests.
Yeah, yeah. Actually having people. Right. Great. You know, the one where it's just me by myself. That's going to be the one that's very weird. Because it will just be sort of a...
You'll have to get, like, a sock puppet to talk to who can answer back.
I think it's going to really remind me of my childhood a lot. Because I was an only child. Oh. And, yeah, there's a lot of... non-sexual playing with myself, right?
And then later, sexual.
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, you know. I mean, everybody sees that one movie on Cinemax at some point.
Exactly.
Right? You stay up late.
And then you gotta feel a little tingle, and then you realize what you gotta do. Did you know that, like, babies get erections?
Oh, yeah.
That's fucked up.
Hey.
Weird info.
You're a baby. You know everything and nothing at once. Exactly. And therefore, you are the Buddha. So get a boner.
Little baby Buddha boner.
Little baby Buddha boner. That should be... okay, good. In addition to this documentary, we're going to make a book of tongue twisters.
Yeah.
So, Seth, are you familiar with how we play this game?
Yeah, yeah.
Great, because you said you were going to listen to a couple of episodes.
And I did. I did do that thing.
All of what we've got this week, I have just... my wife and I went to London and Paris over the last 10 days.
I hope that was an enjoyable journey.
Oh, we had a blast.
Good, good.
So all the topics this week have to do with I See London, I See France.
Indeed.
Since there's no one else to pick, you get to choose one through 13.
Because 1 through 13?
We have a fun little add-on thing here. What I'm going to do, because you're competing solely against yourself, is you need 16 points or more to win.
Podcast.
Oh, yeah. This is really about America, right? Just pull yourself up.
Exactly.
You've got bootstraps.
Yeah. It's a thing that happens in physics that you can pull yourself up
by
your feet.
Because it doesn't make any sense.
Your arms are stronger than gravity, so yeah.
That's what Wicked is about, right?
Someday I'll have to tell you about the time I had to sing Defying Gravity on a bed in a play a cappella.
Whoa.
It was an adventure.
This didn't lead to a trash can fire, did it?
Well, that's a story for another day.
I love it. Alright, so Seth, pick a topic.
Let's go with number three.
Number three? Well, great. Do you have a vague idea about Gertrude Ederle?
Gertrude Ederle. Now, that name does ring a bell. Gertrude Ederle. But no, I don't think I do have a vague idea about Gertrude Ederle. Why does that name ring a bell?
Gertrude Ederle was the first woman to swim the English Channel. She was an Olympic swimmer.
Yes!
And that's her thing. She swam the English Channel.
I directed a reading of a play not long ago by Jennifer Folletto, who's a wonderful playwright, in which she mentions this human, as along with other pioneering women of adventure and
your Amelia Earhart's, Mata Haris,
yeah,
etc.
And I feel like there's more to Gertrude Ederle's story. Like she did other things, right? She didn't just swim across the frickin' channel.
I mean, she lived a full life.
One hopes.
Let's find out. Let's see if there's any deeper nuggets here. She was an Olympic champion. She was a former world record holder in 5 events.
Holy moly.
She swam that English Channel in 1926. Among her nicknames, the press sometimes called her Queen of the Waves.
Queen of the Waves. What a nickname.
Right? That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. You know, yeah.
Let's see. Oh, geez. So she had poor health since childhood due to the measles, and by the 1940s, she was almost completely deaf.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
But measles.
But she didn't die until November 30th, 2003, in Wyckoff, New Jersey, at the age of 98.
She died the year I graduated high school. That's crazy. She swam the English Channel, I think, the year one of my grandparents was born. And she died the year I graduated high school. What a frickin' life. And also, measles. How about measles?
Right, we're back. Measles have gotten a reboot.
Measles, staging a little comeback. You know, it's measles 2.0, the totally avoidable story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's really fun that I also am reading articles like, oh, hey, if you got, if you haven't gotten, you know, vaccinated for the measles since, like, 1985, 86, you might need to get that again. I was like, oh, I probably got that when I was, like, born, 82 something.
You got your MMR vaccine because your parents weren't, you know.
Yeah,
because
they weren't dumb.
They weren't remarkably stupid. They weren't stupid.
Fucking morons who thought, like, oh, I believe in magic.
No, yeah, it's yeah. Not,
like, yeah. Individual freedoms.
I was having this conversation about, you know, like a family that doesn't vaccinate their kids because it's like, no, God protects. It's like, well, God was doing a real poor job before the vaccine came along.
Right, yeah. There were probably innumerable people who, when the vaccine was discovered, were like, God brought us the knowledge of this vaccine.
Exactly.
And now the same idiots are like, God doesn't want us to use the thing he brought us earlier.
It's like, I mean, I have all the respect in the world for theologies.
Yeah, no,
and
I agree.
Still, keep it consistent.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
Because he's just going to come and give you a little rub and tug in the middle of the night.
Exactly, a little
and
way
you
want to
be alive for that, not dead from the measles.
Not dead or even deaf. Like our dear Gertrude Ederle.
Well, great. No points for that. But pick another topic, 1 through 12.
Let's go with number 7.
Number 7. All right. Do you have a vague idea about Marianne, the goddess of liberty?
Marianne, the goddess of liberty? Yeah. Man, you're throwing me some freaking curveballs.
You've picked a couple of the harder ones.
I was listening and it's like freaking Theresa May, the prime minister of a major country. And you're giving me Marianne, the goddess of liberty. Is she in some way, like, associated? Is she the woman that is the Statue of Liberty? Is that Marianne? Is her name Marianne? Do we know?
I don't know that that is the case exactly, but you were really on the right track here.
Okay. Oh, is it? Oh, no. I was gonna, because I was picturing the scales.
Oh yeah, the justice.
Yeah, that's not justice.
Liberty. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the other thing that we say we have and don't have in America.
Right, yeah. We have all the liberty to pay for all the things that we have to pay for to
exactly.
Not get anything at all.
It's a great
Cheers.
Country to be rich in.
It's phenomenal. It's
fucking terrible to be poor.
Or, you know, anywhere between completely impoverished and several million dollars.
I mean, yeah, like...
Anywhere in that range, it's terrible.
Exactly.
It's really not great.
Because anywhere below the several million dollars, chances are your debt far as outweighs your assets.
Oh, yeah, or any economic downturn, like the one that's likely coming our way.
I keep waiting for it.
Well,
this country has the Sword of Damocles. You could ask me about the Sword of Damocles, and I would have a vague idea.
I appreciate that, because I love the Sword of Damocles.
It's a great concept. I only know about it because of
Rocky Burns?
Horror Picture Show.
Oh, Rocky Horror Picture Show. All right, because, yeah, Mr. Burns on The Simpsons also
indeed.
It.
Yeah, he does.
That was my first exposure. Marianne is the national symbol of the French Republic, a personification of liberty and reason, and a portrayal of the goddess of liberty. She's displayed in many places in France and holds a place of honor in town halls and law courts.
So it could be.
So she very well could be the Statue of Liberty lady.
Indeed, because, I mean, the French freaking built it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was French design.
There are like a dozen models of the Statue of Liberty around Paris. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know
that. Oh, yeah, they're everywhere.
I haven't been to Paris.
Places just crawling with it. One stop sign in all of Paris. Tons of Statues of Liberty. That's true. I don't even think there is a stop sign anymore.
Stop signs are an attack on liberty.
That's true.
To just keep going. And so
you have the liberty to be trusted to know when to go and not.
Right.
So we're not even going to advise you on this matter.
That's one of the things I loved about Berlin. Is like there's no stop signs at any intersections. Either it's a stop light or figure it out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Godspeed.
You'll be all right.
Yeah.
It's like traffic circles in Rome, right?
Exactly.
Like just even riding in a car in that, and you're just like, oh god, like, no, there are no lanes.
Nope.
This is. We could die.
Like,
but you won't.
Yeah, probably not.
Everybody's good at honking, and like it's a society. They're all societies that don't have guns, so people aren't afraid to like say, hey, fuck you. Fuck
exactly.
You. And people go, fuck you back. And that's it. That's where it stops.
Yeah, whatever fuck you is in Italian.
Yeah. Vaffa Napoli. I don't know. I think that's what Joey did on Friends once. That's a terrible pull. I'm going to give you a point for that.
All right.
And you get to pick the next topic. So 1 through 11.
Let's go with, wait, so every time I'm pick a number, I'm pulling a number out.
It's going to accordion down. Yeah,
okay.
There's always going to be a one, and there's always going to be a last one.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Let's go with number 10.
Number 10. All right. Do you have a vague idea, Seth, about 221B Baker Street?
Yes, I do have I have a better than vague idea. That is the home of none other than Sherlock Holmes, ace detective, and general son of a bitch.
That's true. Known for his cocaine habit or heroin? One of the two.
I think in the original it was opium.
Oh.
But I could be wrong.
Sweet dragon.
It was an opiate of some kind, either opium or morphine or something like that. You know, like one of the chill out hangout drugs that now has evolved into something that kills tens of thousands of people around this wonderful
country. Because it's been weaponized by capitalism.
It has indeed. And for once it looks like those responsible may be held to account.
And they'll get 1/20th of the prison sentence a person carrying a dime of weed would get in any city other than the one we're in now.
Yay.
But that's cool.
What a world.
It really is. It really is quite a world.
Yeah.
Great job.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's Sherlock Holmes' house. We stopped by there. There's an overly enthusiastic man dressed as a Bobby standing out front of it while we were there. And he smiled when I took his picture.
I'm trying to think what was the name of his landlord, Mrs.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
She was always... I feel like she should have been a more central character in one of the reboots, but she never did.
Well, that's because it was rebooted by Guy Ritchie in that era where it was still like...
Yeah, but it was also rebooted by like half a dozen other people over the last,
Yeah, I guess
years.
The BBC version.
The BBC with dear Cumberbatch.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see the thing about him with penguins? Trying to say penguins?
No.
Oh my God, it's fucking hilarious.
He can't say penguins?
He struggles. He struggles to say the word... And on a documentary, like... This is the version, like, his words making it onto the narration of this documentary. If he was aspiring to be the next David Attenborough, he's falling well short. Because he ends up calling them, like, it was on Graham Norton, which I fucking love Graham Norton.
It's one of the reasons why I wish we had BBC more readily available here.
Oh, right. But pinglings. He ends up calling them pinglings.
Pinglings?
It's just, like, you're a classically trained actor.
How? Like, I mean, I get that it's not a crazy... all right, here we go. We got a 19-second YouTube clip of this, so let's see what happens.
Is penguins. Crested penguins. Parent penguin heading home.
Penguin?
So why are these woodlands so attractive to penguins?
Brilliant. Oh my God. Well, thanks, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
TV's Doctor Strange. great. I'm going to give you a point for that. And
that's it.
Pick again.
Let's hit number 4.
Number 4. All right. Well, it's time for Palm and Palm de Terre. That is our special category where you have to determine whether the item that I present to you now
is
an apple or a potato. So, do you think this sunglasses case containing my Ray-Ban Wayfarers is an apple or a potato?
I'm going to go with potato.
All right. Why do you say that?
Well, like our friends, the potatoes, this is kind of brown and lumpy.
It's true. It's true.
And also, if it is something to do with its manufacture, I feel the likelihood is greater that there would be a potato involved than an apple. Because how do you make an apple? You know, how do you make either into a glasses case, to be fair? But, potatoes seem a little more versatile.
Plus, you can imagine, say, an Italian sweatshop worker crafting sunglasses, eating a potato to make it through the day. Whereas an apple is, it's too diaphanous a snack.
I mean, I feel like, although, counterpoint to your Italian sweatshop example.
No, I'm sure the Ray-Ban people pay everybody very well, and I would love a sponsorship. So if you'd like to, you can tweet at Nate Rigoli or tweet at A Vague Idea Pod.
For your Ray-Ban spot. Yes, I'm sure Ray-Ban, a large apparel manufacturer, treats all of their employees with the utmost care and respect.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, because Ray Ban has never let the company out of his sight, so...
Mr. Ban.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ray.
That's a human
that exists. He's about living differently or something.
Mm.
There was a whole ad campaign about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there? I don't catch the ads. I actively avoid them.
I can't remember where... It was like a magazine campaign, but it was focused on sort of this, like... You know, it was basically just like, hey, be whoever you are. Like, we want everybody to wear Ray-Bans, whether you're straight or you're gay or you're... You know,
be
whatever.
Whoever you are, yeah. And whoever you are just happens to be somebody who, like everybody else, ought to wear Ray-Bans.
Yeah, yeah. Like
be
like
distinct
jeans.
Like everyone else.
Yeah, be a distinct jean wearer. Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't improve on the perfect item of leg clothing, though, you know? Like, jeans...
It's true.
Either be naked,
right,
or wear jeans. There's really no reason for anything else.
Like, in-between pants,
I mean, if you're
fine.
If you're working out, you know, take a... Did you know, fun fact, the word gymnasium...
Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Place where we go to work out.
Sure.
Its root is the Latin gymnus. I think it's Latin. If it's not Latin, please, you know, correct me. Might be Greek. Could be Greek. I think it's probably Greek.
Oh!
Could be Greek or Latin.
Okay.
One of the two ancient languages, yeah... But it means naked.
Oh, because you're supposed to just work out naked. You're going to this place to be naked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the original Olympics all played in the buff.
It's just a discus.
I mean, I don't know.
With a dixus. Right?
Yeah. Just flopping around. Other fun fact. One time I was reading about ancient Greeks and... This is, I swear this is true. It was, because it was talking about how, you know, like, the ancient Greek physique was.
Sure.
Basing it on the many sculptures that we have available to us. Because many people think that the sculptures were, like, an ideal. And the argument of this article was that, in fact, it was an accurate portrayal of what guys looked like then. I mean, they were strong and, you know...
Thick, as the kids say.
Yeah, with two C's.
Yeah.
And also, but the article was very specific, like, you know, known for their musculature and small penises.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, ancient Greeks. Ancient Greeks. And also, in ancient Greece, every once in a while you'll see a portrayal of a large penis, which actually, the association they had with large penises was that it was a person who was very unintelligent. And so it was like the fool would be portrayed with a large penis.
Sure.
It's not a desirable quality. Because they're the ones who's only, like, they're just thinking about sex all the time, not about, you know, democracy and the other matters of the day.
Yeah, they're not crafting the republic.
No. God, no.
They're like, wow, there's so much blood flowing to my crotch.
Exactly.
I mean, it, like, dickhead is term, right? I mean, we have a lot of etymological backup for this.
Right.
Like, there are a lot of, there are insults... universally across most languages that involve associating a person with just a dick.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, great job. I'm going to give you 2 points, Seth.
2 points?
You're at 4 points right
Whoa.
Now.
Whoa.
And you get to pick 1 through 10?
I think we're down to 9. Are we down to 9?
We're down to 9. You're
9.
Right.
Okay.
1 through 9.
See how I keep track of things?
No, I appreciate it because I'm not good at counting. English major.
International studies major.
See?
Yeah.
You had to count all those countries.
There were so many.
There's at least 16 of them.
you know, that's an interesting... It's an interesting conversation, actually, is how many countries exist.
And right.
You would think, just look at a fucking map.
Sure.
And count the countries. But what's your definition of country?
Well, yeah. Is it... I mean...
Is it recognized as a member state of the EU? Or of the EU? Of the UN? Is it... The UK is a state, but it is 4 countries.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Wales and Ireland and Northern Ireland and Scotland are all their
not,
own
not,
countries.
Not so much Ireland. Not so much Ireland.
I guess...
I mean, Ireland is its own country, but it's also its own state. It does its own thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they fought very hard for that, right?
It's true. Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
And continue to be pretty edgy to this day.
Oh, yeah. There's we caught on the hotel TV, there's a program called Dairy Girls.
Oh, my God, it's
Have
so
you
good.
Seen it?
It's so good.
It's
I've
really
only seen
good.
The first episode.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, great. Hilarious and also kind of touching. And,
yeah, it's very, it has this, it's very cinematically shot, for
yeah.
one. It's very sincere. It takes place in the 90s, so it's like...
During the Troubles.
During, yeah. And that's the thing, you know, watch more, but I mean, it gets pretty rough. And oh shit, I you know, because I was a dumbass high school kid, so I didn't even, like, know this stuff was going on, really.
I mean, you know, like, I remember when the Good Friday Agreement was reached, but I didn't know what that meant. And now I know. Now I know it was the end to, one might even say, centuries of terrible struggle. And now we're on Brexit.
And we might welcome it right back.
We might welcome it. This is, like, the biggest sticking point in Brexit.
Sure.
Is how to manage the relationship between Northern Ireland and Ireland. Because you need free passage of people. And if
you also don't want to, like, I mean, we seem to know enough about how to not and how to create insurgent groups within societies. And yet we keep doing the wrong thing.
Yeah. Well, so one of these days, probably you and I should start another podcast.
Great.
The two of us. And I have an, because I have this idea for a podcast that I think is compelling. And I haven't landed on a name yet, but the concept is something like things we know how to do better.
Well, great.
You know,
I like that.
Just like going through shit we do in society that we know we do it like the worst way.
Sure.
And we keep on doing it. We, like, just talk about the different ways of doing it that are much better than that.
Episode one, healthcare.
Exactly. Like, that's pretty much the starting point.
I'm probably episode 1 through 20?
I mean, you could do a whole podcast.
Yeah.
For many years, you could sustain it on just talking about what's wrong with American healthcare.
Oh, I mean, there's an older... God, because now it's probably 10 years old. There's an episode of Frontline where the correspondent goes to 6 different countries.
Yeah.
And basically surveys the healthcare system there, compares it, and basically shows that, look, these places don't have, like, socialist healthcare.
Nah.
In that buzzword bullshit term. They just have systems where instead of saying, like, whatever, they say, we should have rules around this so people don't get fucked because everybody gets sick and dies.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's, like, weird. It's weird how that works.
It's and in every case, there is literally no argument except for a few people will make less money.
Right.
For having our system.
Oh, sure.
You know, like, it's flabbergasting. But there are all sorts of things that we can... I mean...
Oh, yeah.
The number of things that we do in ways that are just nonsensical.
We can talk about transportation. We can talk about...
We can talk about voting. Voting in America is really stupid.
Everybody should have some sort of mail ballot or online ballot, and everybody should be automatically registered to vote, and then they just opt out of voting by not doing it.
That just reminded me of something terrible
did you forget to vote today?
I forgot to vote today!
Oh, shit.
Oh, no, I was running around, I had a job interview and errands to run, and I totally... Oh, I am... To all of you listeners out there, I apologize that I did not perform my civic duty today.
Seth... Pick 1 through 9.
Let's go with number 5. What's happening in number 5?
Well, hey, the royal baby was just born.
Yes, it was.
Right? Harry and Meghan's boy exists.
Indeed.
In cloister, it appears at this point, because we don't really know anything about him. But your task is to name this baby with the most elaborately royal name possible. So give me your best royal baby name.
I mean, I think we've already referred to the best possible baby name, which is Benedict Timothy Carlton Cumberbatch III, which is his name.
Perfect. Penglings.
Penglings. Benedict Timothy Carlton Cumberbatch III.
Great. I like that. I'm going to give you 2 points.
I guess now would be the fourth, because there's already a...
There's already a third.
Yeah.
But there's already, like, I mean, we don't want to raise another royal birth scandal, do we? Because isn't there a whole thing about Harry's not actually Charles's kid or whatever?
Oh!
He's redheaded.
Yeah, I mean...
That's all silly.
So,
genetics are complicated. The internet shouldn't be weighing in on everything like
it
does.
Have we resolved whether... Because there was that thing going around for a while that redheads were going extinct. Like, that eventually we'd have no more redheads.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I see them everywhere. Gingers continue to infect our society.
with cuteness.
With cuteness.
Yeah.
With adorableness.
And also Ed Sheeran.
And, but, and he still exists and somehow got on Game of Thrones, and I'm still pissed about that.
What the hell? Yeah, no, redheads aren't going extinct. That was inaccurate.
I think, you know, like...
We should really focus, just, let's focus on climate change. And also, not letting children be shot. Those things would be important.
I bet we could draw, like, if you took the temperature of the Earth and took the number of redheads walking the Earth, I bet there's a pretty strong correlation.
Ooh, okay. Scientists, get back to us at A Vague Idea Pod and at A Vague Idea Podcast on the Instagram. You can send us a photo of your results. Great job. I'm giving you 2 points.
And
you
get to pick again. Always equal each other. let's see. Let's do number three again.
Number three. Great. Do you have a vague idea about Georges Eugène Haussmann?
Haussmann.
Spelled Haussmann. Haussmann. But by my pronunciation, you should at least know that he's French.
He's one of those Frenchies.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I have not got a vague idea of Georges Eugène Haussmann.
So the cool thing, you've been to Paris?
You know, not since I was in my mother's uterus.
Wow. Okay.
But so, I was there in my mother's uterus.
I mean, as long as, yeah, you had a great seat.
Indeed. I didn't get to enjoy the food, but I got to enjoy it secondhand.
It's true. A little pre-chewed, but it's there. So the thing is, you know, Paris is pretty uniform in the way the architecture is right. Throughout the city.
Yeah, it just kind of looks generically Frenchy.
Yeah, yeah. There are lots of beautiful white buildings that are no more than 4 stories tall, and they have these tile roofs right. And the rooftop gardens and stuff. Mm-hmm. So Haussmann was the guy who was brought in by Napoleon III to carry out a massive urban renewal project, which basically meant tearing down all of the slums and everything that had built up in Paris.
It's
and
like
replacing it with this unified thing.
So it's like the first ever gentrification.
Yeah.
You know, it was before the north side of Denver, before Brooklyn.
Well, and like gentrification that was actually, that actually even had thought behind it, because the gentrification we have right. Here is like, oh, there's money. Great. Build whatever garbage you want.
Exactly.
Right? Where this was sort of like, hey, we should have, like, this place should feel like a place.
Yeah.
And this is a gentrification that designs all these buildings to have storefronts and things in the bottom floors and housing above. Like, it's very intelligent.
I mean, you
have to admire the thought process behind a person who lived from 1809 to 1891.
What?
So we're talking about an era where this would have been very old urbanism.
Yeah.
But a very new urbanism take on how to do that.
Very interesting. It reminds me of the planning that went into Barcelona.
Yeah, okay.
Have you seen the aerial views of
Barcelona? I don't have a lot of familiarity with Barcelona.
It's incredible. Like, every city block is like this, you know, square lump. They're all about the same size. They've all got a little courtyard in the middle. They're
yes.
all, it's all uniform. It's all beautiful. And I am, if what you're asking is whether I'm in favor of tearing down all of Cherry Creek and replacing it with something tasteful, then yes. Yes, I
well,
am.
Sure. You don't like Denver's Times Square?
That's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly what it has developed into.
Yeah. The tastelessness and total lack of any sense of what makes for culture or, you know, like, who needs it? I stole these shoes, dude. This is a fun fact.
But they're in... I like the weathered Chuck look because
it's a good look.
Those canvas ones when they're really worn out, they feel real.
Exactly.
They remind me of David Tennant's Doctor as well. So there's that.
Oh yeah, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Favorite Doctor?
Yeah, David Tennant for sure.
Yeah, all right.
I thought he was the most. He had the best balance of like happy and tragic at the same time.
I mean, I thought Matt Smith carried it on well.
He did. No, Matt Smith was great. And I haven't really seen any of Peter Capaldi or Jodie.
Any of Jodie's books. And I want to.
And I assume Jodie is amazing because I like
she's
everything
brilliant.
That she's been.
Yeah, I mean, freaking Broadchurch.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Also David Tennant.
Yeah.
Also, oh shoot, what's her name?
Olivia Colman.
Olivia Colman. Yep. She's amazing. Oh my god, I would watch Olivia Colman in anything.
Oh, you've seen Peep Show.
I've seen a lot of Peep
Show. Okay, yeah, because she's in that.
Of course.
And then Mitchell and Webb look is also phenomenal.
Indeed. I mean, Mitchell and Webb, when they get together, they make shit funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's anglophilic.
Yeah.
We're loving it.
BBC America. Tune in.
Woo! So, I'm going to give you 2 points for that.
I can't.
Which was the royal baby name.
Yeah. Was that royal baby name? Were we still on royal
baby? Oh, no, we were on Osman. So, that's no, right, you didn't get any points.
I got no points.
No points no idea. For Osman.
No idea who that
but,
was.
But you can pick 1 through 7.
All right, let's go with, let's pick up sticks number 6.
Number 6. It's time for the bonus question.
Bonus question!
Boo! 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 All right. So I need you to name one of the real alternate names for French toast. French toast is something that exists all around the world. You know,
well,
much like the statues that crumble for sugar.
Right? Are we thinking of something like Freedom Toast, which was a thing, briefly?
I would accept Freedom Toast as the answer. Yes, I would.
I mean, it's the funny thing is, of course, French toast, much like French fries, I think has its origins in Belgium, not France. But I could be wrong. I know French fries are Belgian.
The origin of French toast seems to be a little shaky because there's...
I've also never seen a Frenchman eat French toast.
Yeah, I've never seen French toast on a menu in France.
Well, I mean, they just call
it toast.
I haven't
been that many times, but I've been.
It's just, you see toast, and then it's natural. Like,
But it's not like the soaked in egg fried thing. And, yeah, so our earliest known reference for French toast is in the Apicius, a collection of Latin recipes dating back to the 4th or 5th century.
I'm acquainted, yeah.
Where it was described simply as the Aliter Dulcia. Another sweet dish.
Ah.
The recipe says to slice fine white bread, remove the crust, break into large pieces, soak them in milk and beaten egg, fry in oil, cover with honey.
People have been cooking good
shit since the 4th or 5th century, at least.
Probably a lot longer than that. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
Like, as soon as we were Homo sapiens sapiens, we had taste buds and a sense of smell.
We gotta mash some of this stuff together and see what happens.
Exactly. Like, I got this tasty plant over here, and I got this meat over here. What happens if I cook this thing with this thing? You know, I am the older I get, the more I appreciate good food.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Same here. There was a period in my 20s where I felt like eating was this burden. If I could just take a pill and not have to eat.
I don't know that.
It's such a waste of time. It's such a waste of time to prepare food and then you have to eat it.
See, I've always kind of been of the reverse thing where it's like, oh man, everything that I have to do that is a part of this capitalist system is a waste of time keeping me from doing the real things like cooking, preparing, serving, and eating food.
Yeah. I've really this is capitalism beneficial, but we've started getting like food box deliveries. So we get these like vegan food box deliveries.
Ah.
And I've really discovered a passion for cooking. Like I'm really enjoying just cooking stuff.
It's an extremely enjoyable activity.
Oh, it's great.
I love cooking.
It's meditative.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and that's what it's really become for me, is it's a meditative experience, and at the end you get to have this just wonderful thing.
Like, very
little. 9 times out of 10.
Yeah, it's like 1 time out of 10, oh, what the fuck did I just put on my plate?
I go, oh no, I really screwed this up.
But no, I think it is, it's about as close as most of us get to being wizards.
Yeah, oh yeah,
right?
yeah.
You know, like
it's,
in the proper
it's
sense.
Alchemy.
It is, it's crazy. And you know, I mean, the pre-prepared, you know, or the shit that you get in those boxes is a great, I think, way into it. And then you know, as soon as you start feeling comfortable and experimenting and just throwing shit together because it's what you got in the fridge and making something that's amazing out of it, like, oh man, it's wonderful.
I've managed to. I mean, the main hurdle for us, it seems, is just that. Shopping is annoying and I don't know what to buy. So that's usually the problem, is we don't have the food that we need in the fridge. Cause at this point I'm confident enough, like I know what to do with olive oil and salt and pepper and a little bit of butter and whatever else. Like I can do anything with it.
You do.
And
cook
I'm
like
sure
a
it's going to be delicious.
Right. Yeah.
No, but the problem is we don't have food in the fridge. So the food box delivery thing is like, oh, cool, we don't have to think about that part.
Problem solved.
But it's also limiting in the recipe range.
It is limiting
which,
in the recipe.
I feel you.
And also, you know what your next step should be, and I think this would be a fun one for you, is like, get a, if you don't have one, get a community gardening plot.
Ooh, there you go.
And then, you know, like, yeah, it'll be a couple of months before you got something worthwhile. But sure. Once you've got it, you've got all this food.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That you can just figure out what to do with. Look up recipes on the internet. What do I do with this red chard? I don't know, but it's delicious.
Yeah.
And, you know, because gardening, because you live in an apartment, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have access to...
We have a little, like, dog run space that no one uses, and it's... I've been thinking about that as an option.
See, that's a good option.
It would take a lot of tilling, because it is some packed down, dry shit dirt, but...
Well, you let me know.
It also has weird sun exposure, but it's
there are
it's
some plants that thrive with the
it's
weird
true.
Sun exposure.
It's true, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you let me know if you want to do that. I will come to your place. I will help you... Because that's one of my, you know what I love is using a shovel.
Oh, yeah.
The
older I get, the more gratified I am by doing physical labor that leads to a concrete result.
Right.
Where, like, you're tired after 6 hours of doing a thing, and then you go, I did that.
Exactly.
Whereas instead, you know, because most of my day job is, I'm tired because I sent 60 emails.
Right, you got
and
them.
There's literally nothing tangible here, and there will be 60 more emails.
I mean, it's that difference between the mental exhaustion, the kind of like, I think there is something that's like a techno exhaustion.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, like you've spent so much time looking at a freaking screen that it just drained all the energy out of you. Whereas physical exhaustion actually over time makes you more energetic.
Yeah.
You know, like you
Well, because you're
feel...
actually building your body up. Like,
exactly.
You're working out by doing that kind
it's
of work.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's so good. And I forget sometimes how good it is. And now, you know, like, now I'm blessed with a girlfriend who's very into gardening. She's a master gardener.
Nice.
So I get to learn all these wonderful things. And also, she's like, we're going to the garden today. I'm like, all right. She's got one in her backyard. We work on one up in Broomfield.
Nice.
Life is good.
That's great.
Because
you're in the dirt, and you're really like,
exactly.
There's really nothing like it,
honestly. And for those of you on listening in, you can't see that my somewhat worn out Chuck Taylors are white, but they're starting to go green because of all the freaking time I spend in yards and, you know, like, doing work and tilling dirt and all that crazy nonsense.
Yeah. Other names for French toast include eggy bread.
British.
I was
going to guess Aussie, but...
Bombay toast.
Bombay toast.
German toast.
What?
Gypsy toast.
Ooh, a little racist.
Poor Knights of Windsor. Eggs au lait.
I feel like where calls them these things? Like, the German toast in particular. Who calls it German toast?
Let's see.
Because that feels actually, like, more probable. What we call French toast feels like something Germans would come up with.
Sure.
More than it's something that French would.
German toast is cited to a cookbook called the Boston Cooking School Cookbook from 1918.
1918.
So it could be like a Weimar Republic sort of thing.
1918 was just before the Weimar Republic.
Okay, yeah.
Because, I mean, the Treaty of Versailles was 1919, was established.
Okay,
the,
yeah, yeah.
The Weimar Republic.
So maybe
Republic.
They were just... taking a dig at Germans. I don't know.
Who knows? Well, I mean, French toast is, like, unquestionably delicious. So
yeah.
I think whoever you credit it to...
The nice thing is the French call it pain perdu, which means just lost bread. So basically you're saying, like, this bread is so stale that we're going to soak it in eggs and milk and then cook it and then eat it again. I love that.
Appropriate.
Good recovery. Great job. I'm going to give you a point because we had a good conversation. And you can pick 1 through 6.
1 through 6. Let's go with number 2.
Number 2.
Go with the poop.
Do you have a vague idea about Jack the Ripper?
Yeah.
Great.
I do.
Yeah.
He was, potentially, he was a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he was a real guy is, there's some question. But it seems like he was probably a real guy, I think. who did some murders.
Uh-huh.
Of women. The first widely recognized serial killer, although, to be sure, not the first serial killer.
Oh, no. No, no, no. For sure.
I mean, that's a fucked up part of things.
Creepy dude's been killing people for a long time.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about serial killers, too? I know things about serial killers. no, when I was in high school...
If you're listening, this might be my last moment.
No, you're safe, actually. And I'll tell you why, because I think it's like 99% of serial killers only kill people of the opposite gender, whether the serial killer is male or female.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
And which suggests that the psychology of it has something to do with repressed desire or whatever.
It's power. It's desire. It's
Yeah. Exactly. And it's a coming together of things too, because they're fucked up as kids too.
Oh sure.
Every serial killer does three things, and as we've discussed earlier, I did one of these things, but not the other two. So thank God. The thing that I did was start fires. All serial killers, and this is true.
Cum fires.
I started cum fires. I set my cum on fire.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Second thing is they wet the bed until like a late age.
Oh shit. I'll just be honest. Like I was like 12.
Really?
Yeah. I was a late bedwetter. My parents got me something called a potty pager, which was actually a device that you clipped into your underwear. So when I started to pee in the middle of the night, it would vibrate. Yes, please. It would vibrate and wake me up. And it worked like a charm. But yeah, that was my life.
Good times.
Yeah.
You've got one of the three. I've got one of the three.
Yeah.
And then the third one is torturing small animals.
Which I would never do. I love animals, and I can't.
I always loved animals.
I would beat the shit out of anybody who tortured an animal.
Yeah, same. I mean, come on. Like, even when I was a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
I think probably I pulled the cat's tail or something because I didn't realize it hurt the cat or whatever. Sure, you know, but not torture. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like sticking needles into a frog or something.
Torture implies a certain amount of, like, you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Like, you're taking in the feedback and continuing.
Yeah, but nearly every serial killer has those three traits on their children. So it's something that is built in from childhood, which is terrifying. Like, yeah. But that's not to say that everybody who has all those three traits is a serial killer.
Oh, no, because some people could exercise those things, you know, or I don't know, have a cathartic experience through.
Or, like, I mean, who knows? I mean, is being a psychopath a genetic condition, or is it something you can unlearn? I don't know.
Because I think the main question sort of hinges on that difference between psychopathy and sociopathy, right?
Right.
Because psychopathy seems to be more of it's a sort of attrition thing. Like you're not going to get past that. Like you're just you're going to be worn down. Where sociopathy seems to be a thing where you're going to find a way to navigate some situations.
Like I'm going to eventually learn that human beings outside of myself have feelings and you know, like empathy, man. Oh, it's a trickster, but it's important.
Oh, it's huge. And it's wonderful living in an era where several people don't have it, who have incredible power.
Indeed.
In our society.
I'm not going to name names.
No, we don't need to.
I think that kind of speaks for itself.
Hey, great job. I'm going to give you a point for that.
Grazie.
And you got five more topics.
Anything else you wanted to say about Jack the Ripper?
No, I mean, he appears in the From Hell series.
I do remember
by
that.
Alan Moore.
Love Alan Moore.
Poorly depicted by Johnny Depp in a movie that wasn't very good.
That's true.
Very interesting theories about, oh, he was a surgeon associated with the Masons, or perhaps a ton of other things.
But who knows?
I feel like I saw something recently that they figured out who he was.
Really?
But
I feel like
there's absolutely nothing that I can find now saying who he was.
All right.
What we've got is this, he's an unidentified serial killer, generally believed to have been active in the largely impoverished areas in and around Whitechapel District of London in 1888. In both criminal case files and contemporary journalistic accounts, the killer was called the Whitechapel Murderer and Leather Apron.
Leather Apron? Leather Apron's coming.
Ooh, nobody wants to watch out
for that Leather Apron.
Everybody's like, oh shit, I gotta buy denim. Hope somebody invents denim soon.
Cloth apron would be, I think, fine. Sure, it existed.
But yeah, typically killed female prostitutes, which, I mean, that's another thing. There's who's the guy? There was some L.A. serial killer who was like the sleeper or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Who killed a bunch of, sex workers.
Yeah, prostitutes over time. Are a common target for serial killers. Right,
but killed a bunch of sex workers over time in Los Angeles over like 30 or 40 years. Yeah, like, yeah. Just kept popping up every couple of years, killing six people. And nothing was nothing really happened. And, you know, one wonders, I guess, how much of an effect it has that, like, maybe law enforcement doesn't care as much when it's ladies of the night being killed.
So I think that's an interesting point, because one of the things that is also true, so when I was a teenager, I read Mindhunter by John Douglas.
Oh, yeah. A show on Netflix.
Now a show on Netflix. A fabulous show. Absolutely loved the first season.
Really good. So the guy that plays, what's his face?
I know what you're talking about.
Serial killer guy.
Yeah. And if you've seen the series, podcast listeners.
It's not Ed Gein, is it?
Might be. I can't remember. I watched the series like a year ago, it's a little rusty.
But like all Netflix series, it opens on some kind of senseless A-plot-based nudity sex scene.
And then it gets better.
And then and then it's like, okay, cool. We've established that we're premium cable.
Yeah.
And we're going to go ahead and tell a story.
But one of the things that's also true about serial killers is that they're typically highly intelligent. Men, almost always.
Oh, yeah, women don't usually do bad things to people, and yet we don't let them.
There are women who have done bad things.
Well, sure, yeah.
But almost.
Sure, Eileen Wuornos's and such. But, yeah.
But, you know, like, by and large, when something horribly destructive happens in society, it's a dude.
Yeah.
Highly intelligent, and so, you know, you think. As far as targeting prostitutes is concerned, whether the thing is the likelihood is they can get away with it, or is it more like a very vulnerable,
it's just that visceral,
woman.
Sexual thing? And
yeah,
it's that,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like you sell yourself. Ugh, gross. Weird.
I don't know if it has to do with judgment. I feel like there's. I wonder to what extent it's just this sort of sublimation of like. Sexual release and violence, right?
Yeah.
And that's because that's so much in our culture anyway. Like, if anybody sees any pornography from the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, like, there are oodles of things that are about, like, violence.
Yeah.
There's about this, like, sort of punishment aspect to it.
Indeed.
It's problematic.
Which, I mean, sometimes it's like if you're in the BDSM world, go for it.
But that's a consent matter.
Not my
matter,
thing.
That's a matter between
consent
people
is,
who are directly involved and they know what they're getting into.
Exactly. Anyway, how many we got left? Five?
You got five left. You currently have 8 points. You need 16 to win, and there are five left. Now, granted, I'm giving out points kind of crazy. There's a good chance you're going to win no matter what.
I need 16 to win. We didn't establish that before
we
got
did.
Started.
I mentioned it.
Oh, did we?
Yeah,
okay.
You need 16 points or more to win. So you've got one through five.
Let's go for number one.
Number one.
Number one. That's been number one all night.
We're gonna play Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Love it. All right.
Your options here are Prince Harry.
Ooh.
Prince William.
Uh-huh.
And Prince Charles.
Ooh.
Fuck, Marry, Kill, Seth. What do you think?
Let's see. I'm gonna go with Mary Harry. No, let's we're gonna kill Charles.
Okay,
I think that kind of
I think that's pretty
saying.
Obvious,
that's a gimme. And then it's between the other two.
Sure.
And I think maybe let's marry William and fuck Harry.
I think that's absolutely correct. 3 points for that.
Thank
Great
you
job.
Very
yeah.
much.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would do. I don't think there's anybody who wants Charles in any other position, and
position.
And William just seems like he's kind of he's always had his shit together. He's a very conventional royal,
indeed.
And what you're gonna get is like a quality log flume ride with him.
Yeah. It's gonna be nice.
You want the roller coaster? You go hang out with Harry. You have a weekend.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You come back home.
Harry's
hang
the party
out with
guy. You know, like Harry is. Yeah, I feel like he would be not only a fun lover, but also a very caring lover, and also not somebody I want to see the next day.
Yeah. No, because he might wear like a Hitler costume.
Yeah. Yeah.
A thing that doesn't get brought up enough. Whatever.
Hashtag Royals.
Hashtag Royals. Great job. 1 through 4, Seth.
Let's go just for some nice synchronicity, for the third time, number three.
Number three. All right. Do you have a vague idea about D-Day?
Yes.
Great! Let's talk about D-Day!
Shall we?
Yeah!
Let us do this on this comedy podcast.
No one ever talks about D-Day.
Nobody has ever talked about D-Day. It is not something that has ever been portrayed in popular media.
No.
Nor indeed had myriad books written about, nor did we elect any presidents on basis of leading it.
Well done.
You know, like, so D-Day was the day on which American forces, in combination with our British friends, landed on Omaha Beach, along with several other beaches. Omaha Beach, most famously.
Yep.
In the north of France.
Saving Private Ryan.
Indeed. Lots of guys getting shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Germans had guns, turned out.
They were set up in bunkers and such.
Yeah.
It was complicated.
It was tricky stuff. We just kind of, like, took a law of large numbers approach to it.
We'll overrun them with corpses.
Yeah.
And we did.
We did.
It's true.
We did.
It's true.
I'm glad I wasn't there.
My grandfather fought in World War II.
He wasn't
a D-Day.
My grandfathers were in the fucking Navy in World War II. And only at the end, one of them kind of like heard gunshots, I think, from a Japanese ship a couple of miles away. You know, the other one, I don't think ever really served in any near combat.
Hey, and that's okay, because combat sucks.
Combat does suck, and we should do everything we can to avoid it.
Yeah.
Not just for ourselves, but for others.
Right.
That's perhaps we might even say that truly supporting our troops is not sending them to die.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Choosing not to kill them for interests that usually involve privatized holdings of resources.
Indeed.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it just?
I think it could. It's an interesting thing to explore.
Yeah,
perhaps this is for our podcast about things we could do better.
Exactly. So yeah, but D-Day. Not only were we sending shitloads of like 16 to 19 year old kids onto a beach that was just, I mean, covered in German guns on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
We also simultaneously sent a bunch of guys in planes to go land on the other side of the German guns, which, you know, mixed success. But
nothing seems more terrifying than slowly floating down from a plane while people are shooting at you.
Right.
Because you're kind of the most,
like you
sitting duck target that's possible.
There's nothing you can do.
Your best option is they shoot your parachute on accident and you fall faster because maybe you'll only break your legs.
Right.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
Although it did lead to the best instruction I've ever gotten for how to fall down on stage without, you know, hurting yourself.
Oh.
Matthew R. Wilson, who lives in the District of Columbia. And is a professor of theater and many other things. Well, I mean theater, but like you have many things within theater at George Washington,
the Juilliard of the East,
the Juilliard of the slightly further southeast. he referred to it as a parachute fall.
Okay. So that's like this kind of crumple thing that you have to do where you let your knees go.
And falling to the side, so you end up like falling on your ass. So the all of the force of the fall is taken by your thigh and your ass. The only problem is, as you can see, and listeners have to imagine, I don't have
There's not
an
a lot
ass.
Of ass here, people.
No, it's
nor on me. I mean, let's be honest. Like, it's mostly wallet in this back pocket.
So. I mean, from behind, we're just a couple of ironing boards.
Yeah.
And so you know, still a little bit with a bruised pelvis, but I had to die on stage very hastily every night for a solid month, And I would say I did not get terribly injured.
And that's really all we can ask for. I took Taekwondo as a child. Advancing to the green belt with blue stripe rank.
Ooh,
somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
it's fine. I grew weary of all of the stuff. Anyway, but part of the falling thing was learning to like fall and slap. You kind of fall and slap to defuse some of the crash. I don't know how well that works, but
it doesn't.
It's part of the thing.
Yeah, the other best piece of advice for those of you who are out there who will have to fall down on a regular basis and not break anything. Ayla Sullivan, who's a playwright, actor, and general theater human in Boulder, and soon to be New York, described as holding a big bread bowl in front of you. If you picture that, then when you fall, you won't yourself with your hands.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing you can do is try, like, anytime you're falling, don't try and catch yourself with your hands.
Right.
Then you're going to break your wrist.
You're going to jam, yeah. You're going to make a mess of everything.
You're not going to have a good time. So just imagine holding a large bread bowl. And it doesn't have to be a bread bowl. It could be any kind of large bowl.
Sure.
Yeah.
The bread bowl just has a sort of softness to it that I think informs the whole experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're also imagining the smell of dough or
warm bread. There's a chowder in there.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. A big creamy chowder.
I was thinking of a bowl in which you make bread, not a bowl in which you have clam chowder that is made out of
bread.
Oh, see,
I went directly to like a Panera thing where it's just like a bread bowl filled with chowder.
I've got a funny story about my father.
All right, bring it.
So, years and years ago, a now longtime ex-girlfriend of mine, although you knew her, Justine.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
She and I were driving across the state of Iowa, and at the same time, my father happened to be in Iowa. He was in Iowa City, and we were going to drive through Iowa City, and it was his task to find a place for us all to have lunch together.
Ah, okay.
And so, the morning that we were supposed to have lunch, I give him a call from the U-Haul that we were driving across from West Virginia. That's a story of its own.
We were listening to John Denver at the time, so...
Going the wrong way, but, you know...
No, but... Sometimes being taken home means going to new places.
Doesn't it just?
Yeah.
Home is a state of mind. Anyway, yeah. Doesn't. Regardless. So I call my dad. I'm like, Dad, have you found somewhere for lunch? And he says, oh, yeah, no, we found this great restaurant yesterday. It's called Panera. And Justine and I just lose our shit.
That's great.
Like, man, it is one of the largest chains in America that isn't, you know, just your generic fast food burger thing. All right. I mean, he lives in the Fargo-Moorhead metropolitan area where there is no Panera.
Sure. We stumbled upon this great spaghetti place called Noodles and Company. I think you should come here. I don't know if it's gonna last much longer.
That's local to us, though.
It's true.
Started in Boulder.
Yeah, it's a local place. Chipotle, also a Colorado company. As although not really anymore because the CEO moved it to San Diego.
Indeed. Although, right before I came here, before I had some shenanigans trying to acquire alcohol, I ate at the very first Chipotle.
And you didn't have any diarrhea, so you're good.
Well, I did. I did have to take, it's part of why I was a little later than I intended to be, is I did have to take a shit when I got to my apartment to pick up my substitute ID because my current ID is not expired. I'm not going to admit to a crime. Because I was driving my car around.
Yeah.
I'm not going to admit that my driver's license was expired. But if it had been, and I had therefore been unable to acquire a bottle of Lafroig, as we are now drinking.
It's delicious.
And had to run over to my apartment to grab my passport. When I got there, I pooped. And,
That's what Chipotle does.
It does.
Inevitably.
I mean, inevitably all food makes you poop.
It's true. It's just Chipotle's, like, faster than most foods.
Indeed.
At least in my experience.
Like, Chipotle and you know,
not
like,
actually really good with spicy stuff.
Oh, spicy
There's
stuff.
There's just something about the composition of Chipotle.
Well, you know what I think it is? I think it's just too much food.
That, okay. You just... your body's just like, oh, okay, we gotta force them out.
Exactly. Make fucking room right now.
I like that. I think that's true.
It's, I mean, it's a burrito the size of a baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I...
Slightly every, premature baby.
Every day on Facebook, women are giving birth to burrito-sized children.
You know how big I was when I was fucking born?
No, yeah.
10 pounds and 2 ounces.
Whoa!
My sister was 9 pounds and 6 ounces.
I feel like I was a... This is one of those things that, like, I don't know why I should know, but I feel like I should know. I feel like I'm anywhere between 6 and 8. Probably 6, because I've always been small.
Kind of in the average
range. I've always been small, so it's probably 6.
You're not that small.
No, no, but I've always been, like, I grew into myself. I'm now an average American male. but, yeah, for a long time, I was always, like, in that, like, you're in the 7th percentile on weight. Like,
so, when I was kind of the opposite. When I was a kid, I was always a giant.
Yeah?
Like, through junior high. Junior high, I got to be the height I am now, which is roughly 6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Were you like
a chunky kid, too?
No.
You were just a rail?
Like, stretched out. Like, yeah.
Fruit leather.
Exactly. and then, you know, like, junior high passed, and high school came along, and all the others just kind of got pretty close. You know, I was like, we're exceeded, and I was like, all right, now I'm just a guy.
Yeah.
But that was a fun ride where I, in my elementary school, I wandered around. I was taller than most of the kids the next year up.
You got to be bigger than people, which I think that's exciting. Because what I remember is always being smaller. And even we had some sort of sixth grade play about tolerance that we had to do. Where I was supposed, like, okay, here's the setup on this tolerance play.
It's a bleacher scenario where me and two other kids who are short are standing, and then the three tallest kids are standing here, and they go, shorty, 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 and we go, tally, 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 which is not even an insult.
No, it's like, hey, you're ugly. Oh, yeah? Well, you're attractive.
Yeah.
Like, so, what?
Yeah, so that was a formative moment in my life. It was great.
Oh, man. That's hilarious. I did get to... But if you ever want that experience, it's always available to you.
What I think is interesting, too, is that there's this sort of, like, perceptive phenomena that happens where every once in a while, I'll wake up some days and, like, I walk up to, like, the counter or the desk or whatever. I'm just like, wow, this is way lower than I remember it being. And I don't know, do you have that? Because I'll have this thing where for whatever reason, my brain reboots and suddenly I'm like, oh, my dresser's really low. I'm hulking. This is great.
So my favorite, a couple of years ago, I did a touring dental health show. Like, it was with Delta Dental.
Mm-hmm.
And we toured around to elementary schools. I was Plaque Man.
Okay.
That's Plaque.
Not to be confused with an award.
Indeed. It's about the shitty stuff on your teeth. And then my friend Joe was the tooth wizard. We had, like, you know, like a 30-minute show.
I like it.
Educating kids on how to take care of their teeth. But the consequence of doing this is, like, every once in a while I had to use an elementary school boys' room. And then the urinals.
Oh, they're so low!
They're so low!
Yeah.
They're, I walk up to it like, ah! Oh, the little people who occupy this place. Ah, they pee so low.
See, what I remember is my elementary school had the troughs.
Oh, really?
So they didn't have urinals. They just had, like, the wall trough. And then the thing that happened around 5th and 6th grade was that the boys would just stand at one end and be like, can you hit the wall? How high on the wall can you hit? And we would just do that. God, urinating with a penis is just a blast.
It's ceaselessly entertaining.
I'm giving you a point for...
Oh, that's right, we're doing a thing.
Whatever it was. What were we on? Oh, Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Yeah.
Good job, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you did it perfectly.
Were we still on Fuck, Marry, Kill, or have we moved on to another thing? I feel like we...
Did we move on to
another thing? No, I don't think we did.
We did D-Day.
That's we did right. D-Day.
You get a point for D-Day.
Well, we didn't do D-Day. Our forefathers heroically fought D-Day.
Our three fathers. Two fathers, one father. So we've got three left, Seth.
All right.
Let's see.
I've done three times, so I don't want to do that again. Let's do number one.
Number one. Well, do you have a vague idea about the Eiffel Tower?
Yes, I do have a vague idea about the Eiffel Tower.
Let's talk about it.
It is a tower in Paris.
Yes, it is.
It is slightly pyramidal.
True.
You know, like, it's kind of a vague pyramid shape. Or maybe like but it's a little bit more than a pyramid.
Yeah, it's like a swoopy pyramid.
So I'm glad that this is coming up, because I was going to talk about the Eiffel Tower earlier when we were talking about the
Haussmann?
Yeah, about Haussmann. Because when the Eiffel Tower was built, it was built for the World's Fair.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I know things. It was built for the World's Fair, and Parisians hated it. They hated it. They thought it was a scourge on the landscape. And they couldn't wait to tear it down.
Mm-hmm.
Except that then they just never did.
Yeah.
In true French fashion, they complained endlessly.
Yes.
And never did anything.
Didn't do anything about it.
And I say that, you know, like, with all respect to the yellow vest protest going on right now, they're doing shit right now.
Yeah.
Good on them. But
they also killed all of the people who were royals in the 1800s.
Which is fucking great.
I mean, good job.
Yeah. Well done. You invented modern democracy. We try to take credit for it in this country, but really it was more of a French thing.
You got your idea and your statue. We're calling it ours.
Indeed.
That's what we do.
And then we rebuilt this other statue, this tower of Eiffel. in Las Vegas.
God. Simulacrums.
So that's those are the things. What else? You can go up to the top of it most of the time, unless they're doing renos. And
it lights up brilliantly on the hour. That's cool. Gustav Eiffel is the engineer who designed it for the World's Fair.
Wait, was he French, or was he? Because that's a very German sounding name to me. Was Gustav Eiffel, or was he Gustav Eiffel?
He was a French engineer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What a fucking German name for a French guy.
Yeah. He was a graduate of École Centrale Paris.
Name
building various bridges for the French railway network, known as the Garibet Viaduct, and he's known for the Eiffel Tower. 1889 World's Fair.
Yeah.
I mean, there you go. And yeah, that's the thing. The funny thing about French history is that, like, all of these monument things were bitterly opposed.
Oh, God, yeah.
For, like, 10 years. And then, when we were there, my good friend Antoine, who will certainly listen to this episode because he does, he took us on a whirlwind afternoon tour of a bunch of sites that we hadn't seen. So we got to see, you know, Hardin, Luxembourg, and stuff like that.
Sure, sure, sure.
His point was basically, like, most of French history is we hate it, and then 10 years later, it's part of our history. And so the Eiffel Tower is a thing where, like, it's new, we hate it. Okay, 10 years later, oh, it's part of French heritage. And Sacré-Cœur, oh, we hate it. Don't sully Montmartre with this giant stone cathedral thing. Oh, no, now it's part of French history. Like, that's just all of it.
Notre Dame burns down. You're like, we hate it burned down. Just keep it.
Yeah. I think they should do a glass ceiling and spire. I think that would be very cool. It's totally not Catholic, so they won't.
Maybe.
I'm gonna give you a point for Eiffel Tower.
Oh yeah,
point for Eiffel Tower.
Which it turns out I did know what the Eiffel Tower
is. That's great. We have two left, Seth.
I feel like I deserve 2 points for knowing about the World's Fair thing, but you know, like,
you know, you're right. I'm gonna give you 2 points. So you got two options left. What do you want? Where do you want it, Seth? Where do you want it?
I mean, like any good quasi-homosexual, I'm going to go with the number two.
All right. This is a fun one. So, are you familiar with Jerry Rafferty's Baker Street? It's a song.
Yeah.
Saxophone.
Yeah.
It's saxophone heavy.
Is that the one with the famous saxophone solo?
Yeah.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Is that one?
Yeah, you. Well, it's not Careless Whisper.
Okay,
which might be where you were going.
Could be.
So basically, what I'm asking for is your version of the Baker Street saxophone solo. I'm gonna play it real quick.
Okay.
Okay. And then you will do your version after that.
Is it not the ba da 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 da.
That's, I mean, that sounds like the Careless Whisper.
Is it the Careless Whisper? Because I mean,
because
I get them more confused.
Jerry Rafferty is more like.
Oh, it's that one. Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Except I, you know what I just did is I had vibrato. When I went.
Oh, here we go.
Starting off a little flute.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot more flute. There's more. I think there might be more flute than you remember there being.
I didn't realize that there was this much flute.
Yeah. For all the podcast listeners, I'm going to play some air sax right now.
So here you go. Do your impression of that saxophone riff.
Somewhere in there.
I liked it. That was great.
Thank you.
It was very good. I'm going to give you a point for that.
Although, again, vibrato, and interesting fact about saxophones, impossible to do vibrato on a saxophone. Although, what's interesting is I think this is true, and podcast listeners, you're free to correct me. Other woodwinds, vibrato for some reason, possible. Like a clarinet, or an oboe.
You think it's just the direct straightness of the chamber?
I don't know
what it is. A clarinet or an oboe is just a line, for the most part, right? I mean, I guess an oboe has a little bit of a hook at the top, but it's still like a tube.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is that makes the saxophone totally sans vibrato.
Kenny G, if you're listening to the show, please tweet at us. Let us know. We need to understand this. Come on the show.
And
we'll have a lot of fun.
And to be fair, I don't know if it's all saxophones, because Kenny G is a soprano sax.
Yeah, which is a lengthwise saxophone.
Right.
No curve.
Looks more like a clarinet.
Yeah, it's like a big clarinet.
Why they don't call it a big clarinet instead of a soprano sax, I don't know. Where's the origin of that?
I don't know. I don't know who named instruments, man.
Because I think the standard saxophone, I think, is an alto saxophone.
Yes. Standard is alto. Baritone is a bigger one, and then there's...
Oh, the Barry sax is a fine instrument.
Yeah. That's what Coltrane played, I believe.
Ah, interesting.
Yes. Well, there's one left, Seth.
There's only one remaining.
I gave you a point for your brilliant Jerry Rafferty Baker Street saxophone mouth riff.
I do what I can.
And now you've got one topic left, which is, do you have a vague idea about Paddington Station?
Paddington Station.
Paddington Station.
It's in London.
It is.
Yeah. It is also the namesake for Paddington Bear.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are the things I know about Paddington Station. It's sort of central, I think, in London.
It definitely is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We stayed near it. It is very central.
And it's famous for its bears.
Yeah. There was a...
It's like one or two stops away from King's Cross, maybe?
Yeah. No, that's pretty accurate.
All right.
I think three stops from
three stops,
Cross.
Maybe?
Yeah.
All right.
It's very, like, it's on, it's close to, so there's a lost property office that's on Baker Street that has Paddington Bear and a jar of marmalade in the window.
Oh, so
endearing,
sweet.
An endearing
so
little
sweet.
Touch point.
Yeah.
Because the British get it. They get it.
They fucking get it,
they
man.
They fucking get it.
They get the value of toy bears and marmalade. Incidentally, side note, marmalade is bullshit.
You don't like marmalade?
Who likes marmalade? Nobody likes marmalade.
I don't know. I feel like
like marmalade is like slightly tart
jam. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
It's kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not delicious. And podcast listeners, feel free to correct me. But you're wrong. If you think marmalade is delicious, what went wrong with your childhood?
You should have lit in a cum fire.
You know, I mean, you've got your great jams out there. The world is full of amazing things.
We live in a world of confiture.
Ah, oui.
Le monde de confiture.
Je ne parle pas français. Je ne parle pas français.
That was a very good impression of trying to do French.
Ich kann Deutsch sprechen und Englisch sprechen. Ich kann kein Französisch.
Your German is actually kind of scary to hear. It's too real.
I mean,
I feel like German is kind of a scary language to hear.
It can
and
be.
And I totally understand that it is not. It is not inherently, but there's something there's something that's very authoritarian about just the presentation of German.
Well, I think there might be a little bit of, you know, genetic memory, like all dogs bark at postmen, and all humans are a little scared of German.
Sure,
as a language, because, you know, a bit of a shady history. But you know, like it's a delightful language. It's a beautiful language.
Absolutely.
And also, if you want it to be scary, it's one of the languages that's really easy to be scary in.
It has the proper glottal stops to be very forceful.
It's like, du kannst mich mal, du verdammtes Arsch! You know, like, it sounds really nice when you're being angry, and also, you know, like, ich mag Schmetterlinge. I like butterflies. It's, you know, like, it's nice.
I like that a lot. German's a beautiful language.
I mean, the thing that...
It's one I don't know. I should probably try to learn that. I'll play with the Duolingo and try to learn some German.
And make sure that, like, I don't think the Duolingo German has a particular accent. I think it's, you know, like Hochdeutsch from the north.
Yeah, it's...
But make sure you stick to that. Don't listen to the southern Germans, because they just sound gross. Bayerische Bavarian German. It's ugly. It's very guttural. It's very, you know, well, and if you get into Austria, God help you.
Seth, I'm going to give you a point when it comes to Paddington Station, and you have 19 points, so guess what?
Whoa!
You have won a Vague Idea tonight.
Yay!
Congratulations.
What's my prize?
You get to plug anything you'd like to plug. Is there something you'd like to plug?
So, yeah, there are several things I would like to plug.
Let's do it.
First question, when is this going to actually be on the internet?
Sunday.
Sunday. Shit. Okay.
Coming up quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in June, come to Su Teatro on Santa Fe. It's in the Santa Fe Arts District. It's a beautiful old theater. And it's also a theater company.
Mm-hmm.
It's 46 years old. It has always been the theater company that is the voice of Chicano and Latino members of our community, who are, I don't know if you know this, a third of Denver.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Turns out this city isn't all white people.
No, it's really not.
There were a lot of people who were here before, you know, you and I got here.
Colorado was Mexico until, like, 1880.
It's true. Well, Southern Colorado. And this part of Colorado was very heavily influenced by the fact that a few miles away was Mexico.
Sure.
The oldest town in Colorado, you know where it is? You know where it is?
No. What is it?
I'll learn you. It's San Luis.
Ah, San Luis.
Where, you know what
the valley.
Yeah. It's in the San Luis Valley. It's a tiny, tiny town. And what I have found is that the language that is spoken there is not Spanish.
It's like mestizo.
It's not English. It's somewhere, it's like a Spanglish.
Okay. Yeah, that's
fascinating. If you go there speaking only Spanish, they won't understand everything you say. If you go there speaking only English, they won't understand everything you say.
It's a Mexican Creole.
I also got terrible food poisoning there.
Oh, no.
Ah, oh, man, it was rough. Just out of both ends. But don't let that
don't let that you. Stop you. Like, because it won't come out of both of your ends necessarily. This is Seth. Seth's constitution is questionable at best. Though he has, we've been holding down some good amounts of whiskey.
Yeah, we have been drinking it. We're halfway through this bottle.
Lafroig!
But no, like, you know, I mean, the fucking name of the state, for God's sake, is Colorado.
Yeah.
Like, this is a state that is defined by...
We are steeped in Hispanic culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, and history.
And we must not forget that. So, so in June, playing at Su Teatro is a play called Northside.
Okay.
That is about the gentrification of the north side of Denver. And for those of us who are...
Important.
Fairly recent transplants... you may not recognize the term Northside as being something that is significant, but what you call Highlands or Sunnyside or...
Rhino
was more 5 points.
Okay.
Or, you know, like, whatever, low, high, or whatever.
No, yeah.
For most of Denver's history, that was Northside. It started as an Italian neighborhood, became an Italian and Latino neighborhood. And, you know, it's telling that story, which I think is such an important story to tell, of how Northside ended up becoming Highlands and being a bunch of white people pushing strollers around instead of, you know, good working folk living their lives. You know, like, it's great. Like, before the tech industry came to Denver, was a city with diversity. Yeah,
there were people just trying to get along.
Yeah.
And trying to live.
And it was a great neighborhood. It had the same great architecture it has today, although more and more it's being torn down and replaced by big boxy pieces of shit.
So when does that open again at Su Teatro?
It opens, I want to say, the second weekend of June.
Great.
Three weekends. And then also, if you happen to be at Elitch Gardens, come check out the performances that are happening. And this will be starting middle of this month. A little past the middle of the month, toward the end of the month, there's going to be a kids show, a magician show, and you'll catch me in that too. So both of these things. And also, third thing, if you love local foods, if you want your food to be grown locally and you want a place that provides meats and veggies and bulk foods, come to Sodo Village Market. It's on South Downing, kind of in the DU neighborhood. I can't remember exactly. There's a Little India down there. It's right across the street from Little India. It's a great little grocer. Mm-hmm. I work there as well now, as of today.
Hey, right on. Congratulations.
Hey, thank you very much.
No, that's a very noble cause, because we have a lot of really important nonprofits in town doing this local food thing, grow local, grow house, etc.
It's important to do it right. It's important to do it right, because how we consume things, how we interact with the world around us, is exactly what determines the future of the world around us.
The choices you make
on that count are extraordinarily important. And also, if you're looking for what to do with your Christmas theater coming, and I know
you got a few months,
but you know it's never too early to start thinking about it. Strongly encourage you to come see Twist Your Dickens at the Aurora Fox Theater. It's running the whole month of December, and possibly also a teeny bit of the end of November. Can't remember exactly when it opens, but somewhere in there. We did it last year. And it was extraordinarily popular and also very, very funny. It is a Second City developed send-up of A Christmas Carol. It's hilarious. And this is where you will see the fruit of my labor of learning how to fall like a parachuting man at D-Day.
You get all of the parachuting... man falls and none of the cum fires. This is a reason to go to a show to see Seth.
And also, if you happen to be in the Springs in October, odds even, you can find me in the play Arcadia, which is by Tom Stoppard of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead fame.
The amazing Tom Stoppard.
Arcadia is probably his best work, if I'm honest. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead is amazing.
It is.
Arcadia is transcendent. It's a brilliant, brilliant play. I haven't yet gotten confirmation that I'm cast in it, but maybe plugging will help.
It can't hurt.
It can't hurt. So TheaterWorks...
We're putting some karma out there.
Exactly. So it's done by TheaterWorks, which performs at the Ent Center for the Arts, which is part of the UCCS campus. And even if I'm not in it, go see it anyway, because it's a brilliant, brilliant play. And also, on the third Monday of every month... Do you have anything you want to plug? Yeah, I got 97 goddamn things.
You've got only things to plug. I'm going to go to the bathroom. Keep plugging.
All right. I'm going to plug until he gets back.
Yeah, because I really do have to go.
So yeah, I have to pee too, but I'm busy plugging over here. The third Monday of every month, with the exception of this month, which is the month of May, but starting back up again in June, I run a series of new play readings by Colorado playwrights. We always have a ridiculous amount of fun. It's called Questionable Theatrics. We do it at the Black Buzzard, part of Oscar Blues on Market Street in downtown Denver. Find us on Facebook, Questionable Theatrics. And also, in the last two weekends of the month of September, will be the Denver Fringe Festival. Fringe Festival, for those of you who are unfamiliar, it's a concept that started in Edinburgh, Scotland, but it's theater that's on the fringe of style and approach and all of these things. It's avant-garde theater, and we'll be doing that the last two weekends in September throughout the city of Denver, focusing primarily in the neighborhoods of Lodo and Rhino. And also, you know what? I think that's about all I got. Oh, no, and also, there's one more, and also the Athena Project, which is an organization that aims to elevate women's arts, is doing their Plays in Progress series at the very beginning of June. It's first weekend of June, and I will be in one of them. I can't, off the top of my head, recall what the play that I am reading in is called, but it's one of the Plays in Progress. And all of the plays in progress are phenomenal. So get onto I think it's athenaproject.org and look at the series. First weekend of June is a great good time. We always have a lot of fun. And that, I think, is everything that I have to plug.
Excellent, Seth. Thank you. Congratulations on winning your first appearance on A Vague Idea. I would love to have you back, and hopefully we'll have better circumstances so you can actually compete against somebody.
Well, I mean, you know, like,
other than the clock and my numbers.
It's fucking 8 o'clock.
I know, we've been going for a while.
We've been going for about two hours.
We're at 2 hours and 10 minutes. but yes, thank you for being on the show.
Pleasure.
Thank you for bringing Lefroy. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. If you love us, please just rate and review us. Spread the word. Say nice things to people. Say, hey, you know what is a fun thing is listening to these drunk people talk about stuff that they kind of know about. That's fun. You can follow us on Instagram at A Vague Idea Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at A Vague Idea Pod. You can just follow me on Facebook by friending me. I'm Nate Regolia. It's great.
Do you have a Patreon?
We don't yet. I have a Patreon that's personal, but I haven't set anything up. We'll work on that later.
You understand that a personal Patreon means nothing.
Oh, I know.
All right.
Yeah, it needs to be like of an entity. And that's the problem. But in any case, thank you guys so much for listening. This has been A Vague Idea. Bye-bye.
Good night.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page and John Perros. If you like this podcast and you like anime, you should check out my podcast with Sean Grolkowski called You Better Believe This. That's found at moleholeradio.com. If you like science fiction books, you should check out the press that Sean and I started. It's called Space Boy Books, and you can find us at readspaceboy.com.